From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. At the beginning of this decade, we launched All Songs Considered. And as the decade unfolded, I've been in constant awe of how great the music's been. On this edition of All Songs Considered, we look back at the past 10 years, the innovations in technology, the innovations in sound, defining trends, letdowns, and some key moments. This is just one of a number of things we'll have on the NPR Music site in the coming weeks as we look back on the decade. We'll post multi-genre lists of the most important music of the decade. We'll have a timeline of key events. And on the Monitor Mix blog, Carrie Brownstein will post essays. She'll ask daily questions. And you can participate in the conversation. Here to join me as we begin to define this decade in music, and in particular pop music, is Stephen Thompson, editor for NPR Music and curator of Song of the Day. Also, Carrie Brownstein, the creator of NPR's Monitor Mix. And to kick off the conversation, All Songs Considered producer Robin Hilton. I asked everyone to think of a trend that defines this decade. And Robin's idea revolved around the MP3.
I am going to cheat a little bit on this and say very broadly that it was the digitization of music, and then everything that allowed for. So one of the things that that allowed for, I think, is for the rebirth of the single. The example I'm going to use is from the Marshall Mathers LP, the Eminem record that came out in 2000. He performed it on the Grammys. I thought, I love that song. Got on Napster, downloaded that individual song. Sorry, it's true. iTunes did not, the iTunes store did not exist. The Amazon online store did not exist.
So
I wanted to get that song.
Your only outlet was theft. There was no way to acquire the song.
Eminem, I'm sorry.
I have no choice but to steal this song.
He forced my hand. I had to steal the song.
What are you going to play for us?
It's called Stan, and it's from the Marshall Mathers LP, and I will say I actually have purchased this since then.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you still ain't calling. I left my cell, my pager, and my home phone at the bottom. I sent two letters back in autumn. You must not have got them. There probably was a problem at the post office or something. Sometimes I scribble addresses too sloppy when I jot them. But anyways, what's been up, man? How's your daughter? My girlfriend's pregnant too. I'm about to be a father. If I have a daughter, guess what I'ma call her? I'ma name her Bonnie. I read about your Uncle Ronnie too. I'm sorry. I had a friend self over some bitch who didn't want him. I know you probably hear this every day, but I'm your biggest fan. I even got the underground shit that you did with Scam. I got a room full of your posters and your pictures, man. I like the shit you did with Rockets too, that shit was fat. Anyways, I hope you get this, man. Hit me back, just a chat. Truly yours, your biggest fan. This is Stan.
That is actually the clean version of that song, I would like to say for the record. And they sampled Dido's song, is it Thank You?
Thank You. Yeah, you actually managed to get two songs in one there.
I did.
We get to talk about Dido's impact on the decade. And,
But I love that song, and you know that was also sort of a big moment on the Grammys that year, because he performed this with Elton John, and they hugged afterwards. It was supposedly a statement about how Eminem is really all about love and acceptance,
sure,
and he's not the homophobe or the misogynist pig that a lot of people were making him out to be. And see, he can perform with Elton John.
In case you haven't heard,
we gave him a giant prize.
Wait, but Elton John isn't gay, though, right?
Maybe this isn't the time for that discussion.
I feel like I'm losing my innocence even having this conversation.
But I love that song. It's a great song. And, of course, Eminem was just huge, particularly in the first half.
I like to imagine you listening to that song, Robin.
Well, I heard it. I saw it on TV, heard it, thought I'm going to find that song, looked online.
And Carrie Brownstein, your trend goes right to that point, which is that if you saw it, you could see it, right?
Yes. Well, I chose YouTube as my trend of the decade. I really feel like across the board, no matter what people's opinion is on sort of all the other trends, all the other things that kind of came and went. Everyone I know loves YouTube. Everybody I know has found something that they've always been looking for.
Absolutely.
On YouTube. And I really don't know what I would do without it. I mean, I do. I do. Let's not paint my life in a sad way. But
just imagine you sitting at a like IKEA press board desk staring at YouTube.
Just staring at a blank wall. No, I mean, the frivolity and just the kind of childlike glee that adults and children have about YouTube is so strange. And the minutia that you could find on there is really wonderful and really surprising a lot of the time.
You want to play something for us that you found that you may well have lost in the brain cells of life there?
Sure. There's
wow.
A band. Jeez.
Like the windmills of your mind.
Yeah. There's a band.
That's probably on there too.
Yes. We should just challenge each other to find... think of something that's not on YouTube. The Equals were a pop reggae rock group that formed in North London in the mid-60s. And they had this single that was never huge anywhere but mainland Europe called Hold Me Closer. And it's this great kind of northern soul dance song. And a friend of mine posted it on her Facebook page. And I clicked on the link, and I couldn't believe it. And at every dance party I've been to since, I have danced to this song. So this is the Equals with Hold Me Closer.
Hold me closer when we dance. You've got to hold me closer when we dance. You've got to love, it's like thunder. Girl, it's really driving me mad. Every time you kiss, it's like murder. It's like something driving me mad. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Hold me closer when we walk. You've got to hold me closer, girl, when we walk in the dark. You've got eyes just like moonbeams. They just seem to glitter and spark. When we get dark in that thing like that, they stand out in the dark. Oh yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Hold me closer every day. You've got to give me good love.
Was there a video?
There's a live video of them performing this song. Their biggest hit just is Baby Come Back. That was a huge hit. And then just as trivia, this band featured Eddie Grant, who went on to have a huge hit on MTV with Electric Avenue.
Right.
So am I getting the song? Is that Baby Come Back? You and I were never meant to be.
Wait, keep going, no. Robin.
I was wrong, but I just can't live without you. No? Dun, dun. That's not the Equals, is it?
So Carrie's gone and gone back to her past and YouTube. You can look up anything. Vic Mizzy died the other day, and Vic Mizzy was the writer of some great TV themes. Adam's Family, Green Acres, and I was able to quickly...
immediately relive them. And that's what I picked. And I ended up not even picking a song for this. This is just more my...
We're talking about trends here.
Yeah, this is a trend. This is just my gas bag observation. But it kind of ties in with what Carrie was saying about YouTube. And that's the idea... I have this theory that nostalgia is basically dead. It's not that we're never again going to long for the past, but that you can just sort of accumulate your sort of cultural reference points as you go along, and you never have to actually lose anything. And so I think just the fact that we can carry our, if you got a big enough iPod, carry around your entire music collection, and you never have to hit a point where you forget about a song. And I think in a way, I'm going to be very curious to see what happens to nostalgia in the future, because as I put my record collection, as I digitize it, it's just that's all there. If I hit shuffle, it might pop up accidentally. It's never even gone.
So good thing or bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. As much as we're all able to kind of follow very specific niches, there's also just everything's there at once. There's not necessarily, oh, I only listen to this, because they can all sort of combine.
See, I was always thinking just the opposite, that it didn't kill my nostalgia, it feeds it. you know, because there are things that I've forgotten about and that I probably would have continued to forget about if I hadn't rediscovered them.
Yeah, it doesn't mean we're never, it doesn't mean people are never going to be surprised. It doesn't mean like, oh, of course, you know, I mean, like we were flipping through the Billboard, you know, Hot 100 for each year and laughing like, the Thong Song? I thought this was going to be the Cisco decade, and he just went away.
For me, it was the trend is the absolute portability of music and the fact that it's shareable. And I think that's what really made the big, huge leap. It's not like you can loan your album to your friend anymore. You can loan your album to every friend.
Right.
And you can do it all the time, and you can and anything you want to hear is just there. And I think that, to me, is the big revolution for this decade. And I'll play a song that sort of goes to, in some ways, in its creation, which was it's the Postal Service, and its creation was a piece of music that was made via the mail. Old school at this point. They mailed DAT tapes. Remember DAT tapes?
Wow.
Back and forth to one another to create the record. So let's listen to the Postal Service from the record Give Up. We'll listen to The District Sleeps Alone. District Sleeps Alone tonight. Postal Service. One of the things that I was thinking about when I was thinking about the fact that everybody can have everything and share it is that there's sort of a less critical mass around specific records.
Right.
And I think that's an upside and a downside. You know,
it makes it a lot harder for us to sit here and summarize the decade.
That's for sure. And, you know, these are just a few trends that we're going to deal with. But
yeah, I mean, it should just be set up front. I mean, we're going to hit about 0.03% of the decade here. So, you know, bear with us. Don't write us letters like, how could you forget?
Oh, go ahead and write them. We'll read them. But just a couple of things, which is that, you know, Carrie, you're going to do a number of blog posts that are going to go to a lot of these issues during the course of a couple of weeks on Monitor to Mix. You want to just mention a little bit what you're up to?
Sure. For 2 weeks, starting November 9th, many folks on the NPR music team, as well as myself, will be doing extensive coverage on the end of the decade, covering trends and the kind of overarching philosophy and our confusion about it, what's exciting about it, what feels a little bit scary or overwhelming about the changes, and just kind of talking about where we stand right now, you know, the way we hear music, what it is that we're hearing, how we listen, what we're listening to. And we're hoping, of course, to get a lot of feedback from the listeners. So anything that we're not covering on today's show, either we hope to cover in the span of 2 weeks, and if we don't, we hope that people will write in and tell us what they want to talk about in terms of the decade, because it is big.
Unwieldy.
It's unwieldy, yes. Wieldy and unwieldy.
Unwieldy.
Unwieldy. Thank you, editor.
That's why I'm here.
Would we say it's the most packed decade ever?
I thought you were going to say it's the most unique decade ever, and I was like, no! No.
That's another mistake.
Just in terms
just
of
unique.
Sheer volume, the amount of music produced and coming out,
well, oh, yeah.
Surely this beats everything else.
Absolutely.
I mean, some of the people, we put out some messages on Twitter, and a couple of people are saying, some of the messages we're getting back about collectively trying to define this decade. Somebody said it's the slow mainstreaming of indie defined the aughts. Somebody said reappropriating the styles of all previous decade. Someone said the decade of crappy music which overshadowed the underrated good music.
That's true of absolutely every decade.
We might know that writer. a crank who writes it.
Auto-tune and stroke sound-alikes, bands with beards, hip-hop hipsters, hippies. So one of the things we want to do next is sort of define the sound of the decade, if we could, and we'd do it.
This is just getting easier and easier.
Let's start with you, Carrie. The sound of this decade, how would you characterize it? Is there something that is so unique to now that just wasn't before?
Yeah, I think for the sound of the decade, for me, both metaphorically and I guess figuratively, I'm going to go with the iPod Shuffle. It's this kind of self-curating device. You know, it conflates all the genres, and it's this near infinite mixtape, and it makes nothing seem disparate. You know, it makes all of your tastes seem like they cohere in this kind of adventure, this rollicking adventure on your iPod or on your stereo when you hook it up to your stereo. And it is very exciting, but the problem that I have with it, and I think what feels overwhelming to me about this decade, is that it removes the intention. Like, there is an intentionality to me to sequencing an album, or to making a mix, or to playing something for somebody. And when everything is so random, when we can just pull from all these singles, there's this overwhelming vagueness to me. It's exciting and it's chock full of ideas, but it lacks thematic consistency. And I miss that a little bit.
You're saying that it makes nerds obsolete.
Yes.
I make a mix CD at the end of every year, and it's painstakingly sequenced. And then, let's say...
Nobody cares!
And nobody cares about my genius! No, and then it's like, oh yeah, I put that in my shuffle. It's like... No, that song's supposed to follow that song.
But I love the surprise. I mean, that's what excited me so much. All of a sudden, that staring at the wall as to what I'm going to listen to now disappeared, and I can simply just be surprised by the stuff that's in my collection. Man, I love it.
Well, yeah, you're discovering things that you already have.
And this is from a guy who still loves the album. You want to play us an example of something that shook you up, Carrie, and shuffling around?
Sure. The last, I set up the shuffle feature, I think it's called DJ feature on the iTunes, and it went from Randy Newman, Political Science, which is a song that I love, to another song I love, Minutemen, Theater is the Life of You. But I didn't want to hear them back to back, and I would never have put them back to back.
How many of Carrie's music picks are actually from this decade?
I think
none. But that's, I mean, why should they be? This decade is every decade, isn't it?
Well, in that case...
I think she's right. I think she's totally... Don't mind us having this conversation with you in the room, Carrie.
I think Carrie's full of it. I don't know about you guys.
I'll play Randy Newman.
Great.
No one likes us. I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise. pulverize them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them.
What's wrong with this?
That's exactly what I was thinking. It's a great mix.
I feel like iTunes picked it because they say the word revolution in the first line.
It does feel like iTunes is working on a level that we can't quite understand, that it's reading connections between songs and artists that we're not even noticing ourselves.
Okay, who cares?
Well, you know, there have been moments where I've been playing a Beatles song and then it will come out, you know, go to a cover of a Beatles song and then maybe a song by Julian Lennon or something like that. There are all these weird connections that it really shouldn't know.
That are rendering us obsolete.
Yes, that are rendering us obsolete.
See, for me, you can talk all you want about the iPod Shuffle, but really, let's be honest, it's all about the Zune. We should be firing up our Zunes and sharing songs right now.
Is the Zune going to be the thing that we look back at and joke about, like, new
did.
Coke?
We just did.
Wait, Robin, did you miss it? Because Stephen actually just made a joke about it.
Who are you people?
But here's something that the Zune is smart about that's interesting, that goes to this bigger point. Zune has this thing where you basically sign up, and like Rhapsody, you get all the music you want. You get your Zune, brand new, and you fill it up completely with thousands and thousands of songs, subscription service. The whole idea of the record collector, the whole idea of curating, it's gone. You want to discover 8,000 songs, you pay whatever, I'm going to make up a figure, $15 a month.
Let's just say $15,000 a year.
and you fill this thing up, and there you are. You know, and I think it's a quite remarkable model, and one that at first I poo-pooed, because the idea of you stop paying, all your music's gone, just makes me want to cry just thinking about it.
When's the government going to come up with a program that's like cash for clunkers, except with Zunes?
You've seen
how many albums is one Zune worth?
Have you seen the gag where it's like the anti-theft device for the iPod? And it basically is this case that makes it look like a scene.
Oh, brilliant. God.
Somewhere out there, the CEO of Zune is like, "Gah!"
Steven's sound defining sound that defines a decade for you, Stephen Thompson.
Yeah, I just decided, I mean, we've been talking a lot about the blurring of the lines, and this one I thought was a neat example of that. It's an album that's made from 3,500 samples, all taken from vinyl records, by an Australian group of DJs called The Avalanches, and it's just a wonderfully... On top of everything else, this it's just fun. And I think of it as kind of kicking off a decade of interesting mashups, you know, some of which we're going to talk about later. But this particular song is called Frontier Psychiatrist.
Is Dexter ill? Is Dexter ill today?
Oh, Mr. Kirk, Dexter's in school.
I'm afraid he's not, Miss Fishmore. Dexter's truancy problem is way out of hand. The Baltimore County School Board have decided to expel Dexter from the entire public school system.
Oh, Mr. Kirk, I'm as upset as you to learn Dexter's truancy. But surely expulsion is not the answer.
I'm afraid expulsion is the only answer. It is the opinion of the entire staff that Dexter is criminally insane. Sane.
That boy needs therapy.
Lie down on the couch.
What does that mean?
You're a nut. You're crazy in the coconut.
What does that mean?
That boy needs therapy.
I'm gonna kill you.
That boy needs therapy.
Brannigazoo, let's have a chew. Now when I count three.
That boy needs therapy.
He was white as a sheep.
And he also made false teeth.
Business continues below.
Did I ever tell you the story about
cowboys,
midgets, the Indians, and frontier supplies?
Wow. That's a lot of work. I'm tired.
It just takes you in about 700 directions at once. It's so fun. There's a wit to it. I love that record.
There's a program, I just put it on the blog today. I don't know if you've seen this thing, Let Them Sing It For You. Do you know this?
I don't.
Robin, I mean...
I don't read the blog.
I may need your plug here. So let's make up a sentence. I'll say this is a crazy, wacky... How do you spell wacky? With the W-A-C-K-Y? A-C-K-Y.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah, decade. And you put this in, and you hit play... Well, it's supposed to say decade. I don't know. It was a little
what
bit obscene.
What the hell was that?
So, it takes words from
it's got every,
all different
it's got every
songs.
Every word in the
and
English language sampled.
Sampled from songs. So, I will say.
So, the Avalanches, those guys probably spent like 2 years putting that record together. Yeah.
They've been rendered obsolete like we have. The machines are taking over. All the music.
English. I mean, really.
There's like no the better
that,
song
like
to take the word
I can
language
program,
from.
I can program it so Colin Hay speaks for me.
Language! And guessing the songs it's from is crazy, too.
Oh, yeah.
This is
I feel like I'm
Swedish radio. Spent their time as an art project making this. You can find it on the All Songs Consider blog as a link. But yeah, go on.
It feels like an old radio contest or something. Like, name these 20 songs in 10 seconds or whatever.
Absolutely intense. Robin Hilton, sound that defined the decade for you.
I think it sort of ties in with everything we're all saying, sort of the decade of everything being mashed together. But for me, it was very much the decade of hip-hop, and specifically the appropriation of hip-hop by all the other genres and the absorption of hip-hop. The mainstreaming of hip-hop maybe is another way of saying it. And I think of songs, even something as sweet as a Regina Spektor song, the song Fidelity, that you could tell even with a song like that when it came out, the opening rhythms had a very much draw from hip-hop, I think, the plucked string samples that she uses. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like Dr. Dre from The Chronic. Seriously. I'm not even joking. Pull up Dr. Dre's song the next episode. Taking chances while we dancing in the party for sure. Slip my when she got in the back door. Looking at me strange, but you know I don't care. Step up in this just a swing in my talking. Walk if you're down with the sick. Take a with some and take this from this jet out of town. Put it down for the father of rap. And if your get cracked. Jet your trap, come back.
Well, lyrically, they're basically exactly the same.
This is reminding me of the Flight of the Conchords, the Mother Ucker song or whatever that they have where they eat out every other word.
But it is. It's the same little pizzicato.
Yeah. So this is the song that I picked to play. Actually, it wasn't a particularly influential hip-hop song, although it was a big hit single, by Missy Elliott called Pass That Dutch. It's just one that I really, really loved and really knocked me out. It's all about the rhythms.
Listen up, everyone. We have been just informed that there's an unknown virus that's attacking all clubs. Symptoms have been said to be heavy breathing, wild dancing, coughing. So when you hear the sound... Run for cover, cover, cover.
Pretty boy, here I come. Pumps in a bump, make you wanna hurt something. I can take your man, I don't have to sex some. Hang him out the window, call me Michael Jackson. I'm a pain in your rectum. I am that bitch y'all slept on. Heavy hit around, spit up, call me rerun. Hey, 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 I'm what's happening. Hypnotic in my drink, that's right. Shake till it stink, that's right. Mr. Moe's on the beat, that's right. Put it down for the street, that's right. The Dutch, baby. Shake, shake, shake your stuff. Pass that Dutch. Pop that, jiggle that fat. Don't stop, get it to
your clothes get wet. Number one, drums go bump, bump, bump. This beat here will make your home bump jump. If you's a fat one, put your clothes back on before you start putting potholes in my lawn. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, I'm under attack like my name was Saddam. I am the bomb from New York to my lawn, and I can write a song sicker than Jeffrey Dawn. Who touched my car alarm? Breaking my car, you will hear Viper arm. I've been a superstar since Daddy Kane was raw. I'm live on stage, come on and give me some applause. Thank you. Oh, thank you. You all are so wonderful.
Come on, that is awesome. That is incredible.
You can see why it's had so much influence. You're talking about the absolute best sounding music, just from a strictly sonic standpoint. You're talking about the best sounding, most sophisticated sounding music. It's no wonder that's bled across multiple genres. That's such a great song.
Yeah, that just knocks me out. And it's funny, too. I mean, it's a fun
it goes
and
back
funny.
To, it goes back to the point about wit.
Yeah, and you want to move. That's just great.
I was trying to think of a music that couldn't have existed at any other time but this decade, and the Missy Elliott certainly is one of them. I was going in another direction, and I came up with something that maybe is painfully obvious, which is Animal Collective. I really can't think of a band that sounded quite like what they sound like, and so I'm just going to play Peacebone from the Strawberry Jam record.
Bonefish.
You know, with all the what we think of, and we've talked about this before, with all the personal music, I'd like to move on and talk about either major records, major events, TV shows, something that helped define the decade. And Robin, you picked one that gets more to the the personal, maybe the inward, maybe the heart.
Yeah. I keep going back to I thought of many, but the one I keep going back to is the release of the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack, which is right at the beginning of the decade. And it spawned this whole rebirth or renaissance for old-timey music, Americana, roots music, and it just was huge. And they had the whole Down from the Mountain tour promoting it. And, just working here and seeing the music we got in, the labels were definitely jumped all over that and started sending us all this old-timey country music and folk music. And
lots of reissues, great reissues.
Yeah, lots of great reissues. And it also ties into another theme that I thought was defining for this decade, which was the decade of soundtracks, personal soundtracks that we carry around with us on our iPods. And also, I said I have more hip-hop albums than ever before. I also have more soundtracks than ever before. And this was one of the first really, really big ones of the decade.
Quite a surprise, really.
Yeah,
for
was
the kind of music it was.
From that soundtrack, I'd like to play the Big Rock Candy Mountain song by Harry McClintock.
Mm-hmm.
One evening as the sun went down and the jungle fire was burning, down the track came a hobo hiking, and he said, boys, I'm not turning. I'm headed for a land that's far away beside the crystal fountains. So come with me, we'll go and see the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, there's a land that's fair and bright, where the handouts grow on bushes and you sleep out every night. Where the boxcars all are empty and the sun shines every day on the birds and the bees and the cigarette trees, the lemonade springs where the bluebird sings in the Big Rock Candy Mountains.
In the Big Rock, you know, I think actually Animal Collective ought to try.
I love this song, and you know, if I could say anything negative that came out of the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack, it's to me there ended up being this backlash to it. There was a time in my life where I could not get enough of this music, and then suddenly we were saturated with it, and you know, I had to re-rip the CD because I when I was looking for it for the show, I realized I deleted it from my computer, and. You know, and that sort of speaks also to something else that defined this decade is a shortening of attention spans, which is that, you know, because we're getting inundated with so much stuff all the time, it's hard to really get into and hold on to any one thing.
I'm talking with Robin Hilton, producer of All Songs Considered, Stephen Thompson, the editor for NPR Music, and Carrie Brownstein, the writer for Monitor Mix, the great blog that we do, that she does on NPR Music. And we're talking about defining this decade. And right now we're talking about significant records or events that you would look back on, you know, 10 years from now and say, you can't forget this. And what would that be for you, Carrie?
For this one, I chose something that, much to Stephen's chagrin, is not something that I like.
Oh, come on, Carrie.
And that is American Idol.
Why?
Well, a couple things. So to me, American Idol is anti-art and it's anti-music.
Oh,
and,
please. Piffle.
What it was significant...
You spell piffle?
Can you fact check and spell check that word, piffle? You know, American Idol came around and came to popularity during the Bush administration and the earlier part of this decade. And it was during a time where people were, you know, were already had doubts about facts and about things that potentially were being manipulated. The line between fake and real felt very blurred. You know, pair that with fake news, you know, the Colbert Report and Jon Stewart. And what I think, I mean, American Idol was a perfect embodiment of that strange blur of fake and real. But what I think it gave people an appetite for, and the way it drew a line in the sand, was it made people want authenticity. So for me, American Idol isn't as interesting for what it is and how huge it was, but for what came about instead of it. Because it really gave space to these more quiet, understated records. It became this marked contrast with intimate home recordings and, you know, in a time when nothing was underground anymore and everything was out in the open. It really drew a line in the sand. Like, here are the people that are doing real things, and here is this mainstream, universal, mass market, crass thing, American Idol. I'm sorry, Stephen.
Sighing beleaguredly. I mean, just because of that time that Carrie Underwood landed the plane on the aircraft carrier, you can't just blame the whole show. There's some very good music came out of American Idol.
You want to play some of it, Carrie, or did you
no,
pick
Carrie
something?
No, Carrie wants to play Taylor Hicks. That's fine.
But let's America chose Taylor Hicks, didn't they?
And he rapidly disappeared. After.
I like the fact that Carrie, this is the fourth thing that Carrie's played. This is the first thing that Carrie's playing that's actually from this decade. And it's Do I Make You Proud by Taylor Hicks.
Thank you for introducing it for me,
Sorry,
Stephen
go
Thompson.
Ahead. You can reintroduce it.
No. I like the way you did it better.
That was great.
No, I can't.
I know I can't fight this feeling any longer.
It kind of is.
It's like, yeah.
Forgotten what I started fighting for.
Raise my hand. That was not me. And now that's who I am. Because of you, I am standing tall. My heart. The one
You can find the rest of it on YouTube.
I just want to point out that Taylor Hicks has some hardcore fans who are going to pound us with letters about this.
Okay. Steven, you got a palate cleanser, or at least some thought that's going to... I mean, you're a fan of American Idol. Maybe I shouldn't throw it to you, but I'm going to do it anyway.
I'd like to talk about Kelly Clarkson. I picked the Gray album, a mashup by Danger Mouse. He mashed up, obviously, Jay-Z's The Black Album with the Beatles' White Album and created this incredibly smooth fusion of the two. And
he's done an awful lot of amazing stuff, both in the later part.
Yeah, who's ultimately turned out to be a very important figure in contemporary music, on top of this thing that sort of came out of nowhere as seemingly as a lark, but wound up being an important record. And the song I picked, which we can hit a little bit of as by way of forgetting about Taylor Hicks, we'll play 99 Problems.
If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. I got the rap patrol on the Gap Patrol. Foes that want to make sure my cask is closed. Rap critics to save money, cash holes. I'm from the hood, stupid, what type of facts are those? If you grew up with hoes in your Zappa toes, you celebrate the minute you was having dough. I'm like, oh, critics, you can kiss my whole ass. If you don't like my lyrics, you can press fast forward. Got beef with radio if I don't play they show. They don't play my hits. I don't give a this shit. So rap mags try and use my black ass so advertisers can give them more cash for ads. Cause I don't know what you take me as or understand the intelligence that Jay-Z has. I'm from rags, the richest, and I ain't dumb. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me. 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a timeless sentiment that still holds true.
I think he's saying he has 99 problems, but an itch is not
one. It's a little hard to tell because it's a radio edit.
Right. Itch, I think, is the word. He's got a bad itch. He can't.
And I'm going to go.
But he doesn't have that. That's not a problem.
Oh, right. That's not.
I'm going to go for, again, the obvious, maybe in terms of the...
That's why you're here, buddy.
That's why, yes. But I just think that we can't not talk about important records of the decade and without talking about Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, which on so many levels, on the level of the deaf ear of the record company passing on a record like this, on the ability of a band to have the foresight to say, well, here it is, folks, we've done it, and put it on the internet for fans. And then in some ways, for a smarter record label owned by the same company as the first one that turned them down, to go ahead and say, this is a great record, this is great art. None Such Records has done some of the really amazing releases all decade long. And I gotta, you know, we can trash record companies all we want, but you gotta give kudos to a label like that. And there's so many small labels too. To go ahead and pick up and see the wisdom in a record like Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, and not just because of all the business stuff that I just talked about, but because musically, I thought it was a brilliant, brilliant record.
We're going to talk about the best music, our most important recordings of the decade,
right,
in a later show. But that album, I think, is a very reasonable contender for one of the best, if not the best, of the decade for many, many reasons.
And we're putting together a multi-genre list of 50 of the most important records of the decade. That's the 16th of November, so we'll put that list online. So
that episode will be 4 hours long.
Blinking, the walls was I thinking when I let go of you?
When Jay Bennett died recently, I went back and listened top to bottom to this record again. I listened to it in shuffle mode. Many songs came up. But as a record from top to bottom, absolutely brilliant. I love that record. There are many things in this decade that we thought would be great, and we had inklings of things being great, but then wound up being disappointing. So I'd like to go around the table and talk about artists that had the promise and maybe in the end, or at least at this point in their career, it's been a while since they've delivered. Kerry Brownstein?
I remember when Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah was the buzz band, and they were created by the internet, weren't they? Weren't they born of the internet?
Yeah. Well, they created a great record, and people picked up on it and got around, don't you think? I mean, you're not going to dismiss the music because of the way it got around, right?
No, but yeah. They were certainly the...
Yes.
Yes, I am. No, but they were certainly the first band that people really held up. You know, the internet was this new viable way of getting your message out, that word of mouth, that buzz created by just, you know, average listeners and bloggers, and not, you know, big media hype machines or labels, could, you know, create excitement about a band. And Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah had put out this great record, and there was so much excitement about it and so much promise. And unfortunately for them, there are so many bands that followed that trend that somehow maintained a presence that this band didn't. I mean, my dad got the CD for Christmas this year, that year from
when
my
you
sister.
You say it was such disgust.
My dad
got this.
No, I mean, I just remember like how, you know, it was just everyone had heard of this band and it was exciting. And I just thought, wow, even, you know, my sister would think to get this album for my dad instead of, you know, some like Coldplay, who would, you know, much more palatable for my dad. But my dad loved Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah. And sadly, despite the formula of internet hype working for many other bands, it just didn't maintain.
Well, and I think that their second record they put out was it had some great songs on it, but it also presented itself as a record that is brash in a way that wasn't inviting at all.
Right. The production on that record was a real turn off.
I called up Alec Owensworth when I first heard the records. We got an advance on it, and I said, the whole beginning, the first song is really distorted. Did you mean it that way?
It's all garbled.
Did you mean to sing like David Byrne?
Didn't Dave Fridman do their second record? He loves distortion.
Yeah, it was for me. It was so unwelcoming. Mm-hmm. Although there were some great songs buried in the record. We'll play a little from the first Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah record.
Okay, so this is Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah, upon this tidal wave of young blood.
Now that everybody's here, that we please have your attention, there is nothing left to fear. Now that big light is captured, and all that children really light up.
So that was Clap Your Hands. We're talking about disappointing artists that on one level we had high hopes for. I'm going to go for me, Sufjan Stevens, who incredibly creative artist, the project he, you know, said he was going to do, which none of us really truly believed he'd pull off, which was to do all 50
states. I'm gullible.
States.
I believed it. I really believed it. I really believed it. I thought, I can't wait till he gets to Kansas.
To do all 50 states in song. He was sort of a journalist and spent a lot of time making the records. Illinois was, Cumfield, the Illinois was that was the record that he did was the last of the two series.
Two states.
48 to go, folks. And he's not going to do it. We just know he's not going to do it. And he's done creative work since. He's got this, what's it called, the Brooklyn Queens Expressway, the BQE, BQE. Project, a multimedia project. He has a brilliant song on the Dark Was the Night double record. Absolutely brilliant. He didn't write it, but it's absolutely one of the most brilliant songs of the year. But his output has just been disappointing since 2005, and I just want to play a little bit to remind everybody, because when I heard it again, I just remembered how much I loved this record. So I'll play Casimir Pulaski Day.
Goldenrod and the 4-H stone, the things I brought you when I found out you had cancer of the bone. Your father cried on the telephone, and he drove his car into the Navy Yard just to prove that he was sorry. In the morning, through the window shade, when the light pressed up against your shoulder blade, I could see what you were reading. All the glory that the Lord has made, and the complications you could do without, when I kissed you on the mouth.
So that's Sufjan Stevens. We're talking about artists at High Hope, and for me, that he's an artist who's disappointed me in his output since 2005. Robin Hilton?
Well, certainly, I would totally agree with Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah, and Sufjan Stevens, too. I'm almost a little heartbroken with Sufjan Stevens, yeah, because I love the 50 States Project idea, even as overly ambitious as it was. And we both just read in a Paste interview recently that he says, looking back at it now, he thinks it was just a total joke. He says, what a joke. He doesn't believe in the album and songs anymore. You know, and he's moving on to other things, which is, I don't know, it was a little sad for me to read that.
Although, he, like Alec Owensworth, Creative Souls, Alec's record's pretty interesting record. It's not, mm-hmm, you know, everything you'd hope, but you know that these people have more in them.
Yeah, they're not,
at least
they're
I think,
not done.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We're not writing them off.
But I'll throw into the mix the singer-songwriter Damien Rice. When I heard, it was 2002, when I heard his album O, I remember telling everyone, yeah, oh my gosh, this guy, you got to listen to this guy. He is going to be a huge. And, you know, and I think he's done one record since then. And
an EP.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe he still has something left in him, but he's just been so quiet.
And I like that second record. I mean, yeah, it's not like he started making terrible music. He's just kind of dropped off of the...
I mean, that first record was, you know, bedroom record, out of nowhere, came in this gorgeously packaged, if you got the original one, it came in this gorgeously packaged, handmade box.
And well, it was also an incredibly intimate, as you said, kind of a bedroom feel, but he would burst out and there would be opera. You know, so it was very ambitious, very audacious, on top of being a very intimate recording.
The song I'd like to play from O and Damien Rice's Volcano.
Yourself like that, 'cause you hurt your knees. Well, I kissed your mouth and back, but that's all I need.
don't build your world around. Volcanoes melt you down, and what I am to you is not real. And what I am to you, you do not need. What I am to you is not what you mean to me. To give me miles and miles of mountains, and I ask for the sea.
So that was Volcano by Damien Rice, a record that came out in 2002. Stephen Thompson, disappointing artist?
Well, I mean, it's not even necessarily so much disappointing as it's
sad.
It's depressing. No, well, it's sort of fascinating how there are bands where at the time everyone's talking about them. Everyone thinks they're big. Everybody just assumes if you ended the decade in 2004, this is one of the albums of the decade. And then by the time you get to the end of the decade, you're like, wow, I completely forgot it. And what was interesting, where I was even reminded of this band, was going through the Pitchfork. You know, they had...
God, I can't wait to hear who it is.
You can't see me shaking my fist.
We do have to move quickly.
Right,
we've got 12 minutes, and we do get booted out of the studio
okay.
in 12 minutes.
That Pitchfork had chosen it as the album of the year in 2003, and I'm not knocking Pitchfork, but this is The Rapture with House of Jealous Lovers. Were you playing a drum roll?
I was playing a drum roll. Well, she was eager. So that's Rapture. Echoes is the album. And who remembered?
Well, I have to admit that I had totally forgotten about them until Stephen mentioned them when we were working on getting everything ready for this show. And yeah, number one album of the year. Yeah,
it was either them or Hoobastank.
That is just mean. So, but I agree. I mean, is that the saddest thing? I'm just a band that's forgotten.
What is this decade? What's it going to leave us nostalgic for? I mean, what's gone that we used to love that isn't there anymore, Stephen Thompson?
Record stores.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Not only just as a place to, you know, obviously buy our music and have it be tactile, a place that we go to talk about music. You know, I just used to have, when I lived in Madison, I used to just have these wonderful conversations with the clerks and talk to them about what was new and what was good and what they were playing. And there was just this very personal experience of listening to music. You know, we all listen to music on headphones now, and it's not as... You know, you're not necessarily listening to music with your friends.
So if someone's 9 years old in 2005 and they may never have walked in a record store and their experience is typing online and having that kind of community, having either,
there's still,
you know,
there's absolutely still community.
Do you think
it's totally valid, that community. Yeah. I'm saying though that there's what I'm going to be nostalgic for is the way that it, you know, the way that I grew up experiencing it. I'm going to miss, you know, CD release parties and just kind of that, the sort of like person-to-person community of it. I love pretty much everything about the internet.
Carrie Brownstein, what are you going to miss now that's not here in the aughts?
Something I think I missed, especially at the beginning part of the decade, were fanzines, to a lesser extent magazines, but certainly, I guess, by fanzines, I mean the concept of the underground, like a concept of this kind of passing of secret information that, again, was this tactile experience. And also, discovery seemed a little more hard-earned. Like, you know, you went into a store, you find this fanzine, and all of a sudden, you have sort of the key to this city. And, you know, I think that there's something really rewarding about it taking kind of a long time to figure things out. I mean, I'm glad that someone that's 10 knows just as much about music as I do. And they found it out in an hour. But
it's ultimately good for people's happiness.
Is this a little like being nostalgic for walking 3 miles to school in the snow?
It is exactly.
People are just going to miss that. Yeah.
We had to read fanzines, and we liked it that way.
We had filing cabinets full of them.
Yeah, I mean, I like collecting. I like collecting things that I can hold in my hand, period.
Yeah, I think that's, for me, that whole idea of record collection envy, it's gone. I mean, it's just, everybody's got what they want.
Everything.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow, look at that hard drive. That must hold 2 terabytes.
It's a sweet terabyte.
and also for me, the other thing I'm nostalgic for is time.
I mean, just those 10 years you've lost.
Won't get those back.
There's just not enough. I mean, there's so much to hear. There's just not enough time to hear all the songs that there are.
You were so much younger in 2000.
Oh, remember what I looked like?
Wait, no, Bob was.
We should all submit a picture of what we look like in 2000 for this.
I have it on my NPR ID because that's when I started.
Wow.
They didn't have cameras.
It's actually a stipple portrait of Bob.
You know those pin things that you push?
Well, one of the things that I'm nostalgic for actually does speak somewhat to my age, because I was thinking of a specific song and video that I saw right around the time I turned 30 and moved to D.C. and started working here.
Which is around 2000.
And but actually, it's a song that illustrates something I really miss, and that is music videos on TV. I know they're still being made.
It's YouTube, man.
And I know you can see them on YouTube now, but when I first moved here,
I used to pay for them. God, that was such a great day.
I used to. I spent the entire 90s without cable, and I moved here as a gift to myself. I got cable, and I remember just sitting down and watching MTV, and you could still see music videos on MTV. And now towards the end of the decade, I think I read that it made up a little more than 8 hours of their programming at the beginning of the decade, and now it's less than 3 hours of MTV's programming. And a song that I caught and saw for the first time and fell in love with because of the video was a song by Dirty Vegas called Days Go By. And it was totally infectious because of there's this incredible dancer in the video who really sells it.
Still a whisper on my lips, a feeling at my fingertips, it's pulling at my skin. You leave me when I'm at my worst, a feeling as if I've been cursed, bitter cold within. Days go by and still I think of you. Days when I could live my life without you.
You know what's funny is I think that if you could hop in a time machine and do this show at the tail end of 1999, we'd be having the discussion about how, man, I'm nostalgic for when MTV used to play videos.
Yeah, they've been disappointing us for decades.
It's true. But I did feel like then in 2000, 2001, I could still randomly turn on. It wasn't the scheduled block of videos. It was, I could just turn it on and chances were I was going to see a video.
Right. Yeah.
That's Dirty Vegas. We'll put the majority of what you heard on this show online so you can hear the whole song. There's so much more coverage coming up for the end of the decade. We haven't even gotten to the end of the year stuff, which we'll probably do in a bunch of weeks. It's so much fun to look back on this. I keep saying this over and over again, I think, in many of the shows we've done. For me, maybe the best decade ever for music. Certainly the best decade in, three. For me, quick round the room here, Robin Hilton, have this decade compared to
I would say the same thing, that I'm not going to come right out and say it unequivocally is the greatest decade for music, but it's a really strong contender. It's up there. For me, it may be the best decade ever, and with the understanding that everything that happened this decade, none of it would have been possible had it not been for everything leading up to this decade.
It's always cumulative.
Yeah, but it may be the best ever for me.
Part of it is just the circumstances of my life. I work at NPR Music, and I get to spend all day every day listening to stuff. And so, part of it is I'm probably more immersed in it than I've ever been before. But it's also easier to be immersed in it than ever before.
Bob and I were.
You don't have to just be sitting around in your rec room spinning records to be immersed in music. You can. I mean, I'm immersed in music on the train in the morning. I'm immersed in music at my desk. I'm immersed in music in my train at home. And then when I'm sitting in my,
talking to your family
in my underpants, ignoring my family.
Let's end on that note. That's beautiful.
It's either listen to my iPod or talk to my children. And we all know which choice. So.
That is a beautiful metaphor. I think we should end with Stephen. I think I have to agree. I mean, I'm always a skeptic of the group, but
are we going to get the hug?
God, I wish. Hold on. I'll be down there in 3 hours.
On the train. Come on.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with you guys. I feel very excited about the amount of music that I discovered. I mean, I'd say in the last 5 years, even more so, if we can just give props to the last half of this decade, that's when I feel like so much of the discovery happened for me. And just, I listen to more bearded rock than I ever have.
I keep thinking of how we could possibly sum up this decade in any one song or album, what would be a great thing to go out on.
Well, and so many bands that consistently put out great records throughout the decade. I mean.
Mm. I can't think of any.
So, goodbye, everybody.
You figure it out. Goodbye.
Just hum us. Something.
I put out the word on Twitter, and a lot of people came back with something that I've been thinking about and listening to recently, which was from the first Arcade Fire record, the song Rebellion. It just has such a fantastically warm spirit to it that since I have the...
Since I can, I will.
Before you play it, let's note that Radiohead put out some records in the 2000s that I don't
I would have probably mentioned. Picked something from In Rainbows, but gosh, Arcade Fire's.
But gosh, I'm glad you didn't. But yay,
doggone
Arcade
it.
Fire.
Doggone it. I sure am glad you did, Arcade Fire.
Are we all in, I don't even know this. I know Robin is, but are we all in agreement for good album, good first record, Arcade Fire? Not a bad song to go out on?
15 seconds to say goodbye.
Better than Radiohead. Yay, bye. Yeah. No, just kidding.
10 seconds to say goodbye.
All right, goodbye.
Thanks, everybody. Let's go out on Rebellion Lies, and there's lots more coverage coming up on NPR Music.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
Bob.
Thanks, you guys. Take care.
Okay, I lied. 60 seconds.
Oh, quick! Hold on. My humps.
Oh, doggone it.
Wait, Toxic?
Oh, poop.
Crazy in Love? Hey, Ya.
We didn't play Crazy.
We did not talk about Outkast. Single Ladies. Put a ring on it.
Wait, the thong song. Did we mention Cisco?
I did mention Cisco. Good job.
Wait, what about Guns N' Roses? I thought they were going to be huge
Chinese
this
Democracy.
Decade.
Oh, Chinese Democracy. That was huge. That was big. Chingy?
Lil Wayne.
Evanescence.
Other soundtracks.
MIA.
Garden State. Juno. The O.C. Oh, yeah. 6 Feet Once. Under. Magnolia. Virgin Suicides. About a Boy. All the Wes Anderson movies. Lost in Translation.
Wait, Katy Perry.
The White Stripes.
The White Stripes. Oh, my God. Please, nobody. Here's the thing. We're going to do the 50 most important recordings, and I bet something they
will be on there.
And start writing the letters now.
Dear idiots.